Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Grit and fight. I think we want our program to be tough and to fight through any battle, and to get stronger from those moments. So anytime we face adversity, like we're facing now, to get stronger through those moments and that we're not going to back down.
And our guest this week is Hillary Steele. She is getting ready for her third season as the head women's gymnastics coach at Temple University. Hillary, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you guys, as we're recording this, first week of October, about 3 months away from the start of your season. What's life right now? What's the focus?
On details, I'd say. We're really focused on dialing in those little details that are going to make a big difference in the long run. In gymnastics, a little half tenth here and there makes such a big difference. So I think we're trying to focus on those things early. So then when January comes around, we're in a little more autopilot mode.
So is it just practice? Do you guys have any kind of work with other teams and stuff like that until January?
We do a few inner squads on our own. Actually, we do a lot of inner squads on our own. We try to do one weekly, whether it's one event, two events, or four events. And then we do a full inner squad where we have a judge watch and make sure we have everything we need. Come December 19th, we do an inner squad in our arena where people can come watch. That is just with our team. So we don't compete against anyone until our first meet in January.
When it comes to recruiting for gymnastics, are you focused more on the Delaware Valley or are you nationwide? And if you are nationwide, are there kind of hotbeds that when you're kind of putting your recruiting calendar together, you're like, well, we've got to go to X, Y, and Z? For people who aren't familiar, kind of explain how it works.
It's definitely nationwide. We have a few from California. We have Colorado. We have the whole East Coast. Then we have a lot of Georgia, some Florida, a lot of Florida actually also. So we're kind of all over the place. As far as where we look, I think it's more we focus on the talent and then we bring them in and make sure they're going to be a fit for our team and our program and they have similar goals that our team has in our program and wanting to build up the program and get better every year. So not necessarily like a certain place. A lot of times if we're comfortable with a gym, we'll go back to that same gym and see if they have some more athletes that might be interested in coming to Temple.
You're not looking high schools. You're looking more clubs, I would imagine. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So usually you don't have the time in our sport to do high school gymnastics and club gymnastics because club gymnastics takes up so much of your time. So we usually focus on the clubs. And like I said, sometimes we're more familiar with certain ones and certain coaches. That makes recruiting a little bit easier. But we do try to get to know more and more coaches and clubs.
For people who aren't familiar, when it comes to if I were to come to one of your meets, what are the areas of competition? What events make up a collegiate meet?
Yeah, we have the vault, the uneven bars, balance beam, and floor. So every meet, we do all four. There's six people in the lineup per meet. So not everyone competes everything. It's a very select few. On those events, we count five scores of the six. So if you have one mistake, you're able to get rid of that score and not have to count it. But we do compete all four, and both teams do six on both events.
Of those events, are there certain ones that are tougher to find high-level competitors at than others? Sort of like in certain sports, certain positions are, you know, the toughest to find top-level talent. Is that the case with gymnastics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think bars is one of the more challenging events to recruit. Just talking to all college gymnastics coaches, I think everyone has a little bit more of a hard time with that event. It's a good mixture of endurance, grace, and you got to have a lot of talent to be able to swing bars elegantly.
So now let's jump into your backstory. Gymnastics, your top sport growing up, were you always a gym kid?
I was, yeah. My mom actually coached for a long time. Tried to keep me out of the gym, but also would bring me to gym while she worked. So I would hang out there and just watch. She didn't put me in classes. And I just kind of started doing it on my own and stuck with it.
Did you always really enjoy it? Or was it something that you just kind of did and then at a certain point you realize, oh, not only is it fun, but I'm pretty good at this. Like, was there a moment like that, or was it a love affair from the beginning?
I think I loved it from the beginning because I was always watching the older girls and looked up to them and wanted to be like them. I always had a lot of energy, still do. And I think it's a good sport for that. When you have a lot of energy, you need a lot of energy for our sport. So,
what was your main focus growing up from an event standpoint?
When I got to the higher levels, I would say I was better at beam and floor. Those were my two best events.
Were they your favorites?
Yes. Floor was probably my favorite. I love performing. I wouldn't say I'm the best dancer, but I always put 100% into the dance and enjoyed the routine. And I was a very powerful athlete, so I loved tumbling and showcasing that.
And you went to Georgia to compete in gymnastics at college. When growing up, did you kind of get the feeling that you were going to be able to take this further than most? Was there an aha moment where you realized, like, oh, well, they're not talking to any of the other kids. Why? They're just talking to me. Like, anything like that?
When I was 14, I actually moved away from home to train, and that's when I was part of the national team and started doing elite-level gymnastics. So I think taking that next step in the sport and moving away from my family and having half of us in Massachusetts and half of us in Ohio and really putting everything I had into the sport, I think that's when I realized that I had potential to go far in it.
What was that U.S. national team experience like? Like, what are you doing with that?
So we would go to a training camp once a month, and then there was a lot of selection competitions to go to international competitions and compete for USA, which I think is one of the greatest honors, is being able to, you know, put the red, white, and blue on and compete for your country. So it was a lot of hours in the gym, two-a-days every day, a lot of commitment, and it was a mix of homeschooling and going to regular school. So our school was really good about adjusting that for us. But yeah, it was a lot of time, but I think it taught me a lot of lessons and has brought me to where I am today. So
14, what's that, eighth grade, maybe freshman in high school?
Yep.
Like, did you appreciate at the time what you were getting the opportunity to do? Like, just because you're so young,
yeah,
and you just kind of think, oh, well, this is cool. But in the moment, were you like, holy crap, like, I'm getting to represent the U.S.? Or did it kind of take a while for it to really wash over what you had access to an opportunity to do?
Yeah. I think the very first moment that I got selected for an international competition, I think it hit me, and I had that realization, wow, this is really cool. Not very many people get this opportunity to do this. So even though I was young, I think I realized how few people. There was only 12 of us on the national team, and you had to get selected for that spot. So I think that was the realization.
Doing gymnastics at that level that long, and you talk about two-a-days and everything and the intensity, was burnout ever anything you had to deal with, or just exhaustion with the sport, or did your passion over overcome that where that was not ever something that – and I don't even – burnout might be extreme.
Yeah.
But were there ever moments where you're like, okay, you know,
yeah,
doing it again?
Yeah. I think naturally, like you said, burnout, not so much. But I think there are definitely hard days where you're like, I live away from my family. I don't see my family. I'm training all these hours. My body's exhausted. My mind's exhausted. So I think that's natural for any high-level athlete. But I think the passion for me outrode that, and I was able to stick it out.
So I mentioned earlier, go to Georgia. Why Georgia? What sold you on that?
Honestly, originally, it wasn't even one of my choices. I don't know why, looking back, but I didn't think I was good enough to go there and compete. And I really wanted to compete in college gymnastics. I wanted to make an impact on the team and the program and compete as much as I could. My coach was good friends with Jay Clark, and Jay was very interested in me. And they just suggested I go out and see the school. And so I did. And I fell in love with the coaching staff and the team. And really, for me, that's what it was. That was the selling point for me. I felt like it was my family the minute I stepped on campus there. And it's very cliche to say. I feel like a lot of people say that when they're stepping into their college athletic career. But it really is. That's what made the difference to me.
So you spent multiple years on Team USA, and you were worried that you might not be good enough for the University of Georgia?
I was very much a worried about what people thought about my gymnastics kind of person. And it's pretty cool, because when I got to college, my confidence completely shifted and I became a lot more of a confident gymnast in who I was and my ability in the sport. But yeah, it's crazy looking back. I'm like, I don't know why I thought that, but yeah.
I'm curious, when you're competing, something like floor, about 2 minutes?
A minute and a half.
Minute and a half, yeah. How difficult is it not just to keep the concentration, but to fight through? Because a lot of the time, like the quote unquote mistakes you would make, if I was watching, I'd be like, what are you talking about? But because, you know, you mentioned the attention to detail, yeah, and it could be the lift of a foot and stuff like, yeah, that. When you know you missed something or you didn't hit it perfectly,
mm-hmm,
how difficult is it in the moment to not let that spiral? Because I think in most other sport, I don't know, it's such a unique thing because you're being judged,
yeah,
and it's not
exactly
like you're trying to score or you're playing defense or something,
yeah,
like that, where there's something you can shake off. Like, you're being judged in the moment, and when you know you didn't hit it perfectly, how hard is it to stay mentally locked in to not let that ruin the rest of what you're doing?
It takes a lot of mental training, and that's something. When I moved to Ohio, we would do it multiple times a week, where we'd just sit in a room and work on different mental strength stuff and training our brains, because that's such an important part of your sport to, like you said, not spiral after a mistake and to kind of let that go and move on. In college, more so, your score could end up counting no matter what you do. So I always emphasize that to my athletes too, is like, if you make a mistake, I want the rest of the routine to be the best version of the routine you've ever done, just because, like I said earlier, that half tenth makes such a big difference. So if we do have to count your score, the difference between one fall or one mistake and multiple is a big deal. But growing up, yeah, I think a lot of mental training and practicing that. And I think naturally, the older you get, the more mature you get, that helps with it too.
How often do you get away with something? How often do you know you didn't hit something, but the judge didn't say it? Does that happen often, or is that a rarity?
It's not often, but it's something a good coach will always tell you, like, play it off like you didn't make a mistake, because you never know, they could miss it. Because like you said, you're being judged and watched. And so if you play it off, it's just like, if you stick the end of a routine, even if you made a mistake, that's the last thing they saw. So they're focused on that. So playing it off the best you can is definitely the best technique, but you don't get away with it too much.
So you're competing at Georgia. How are gymnastics in the SEC received? Is it home meets are a thing when they're happening, like, you know, to scale we see with football and baseball and stuff? Like, what's the atmosphere like for a Georgia match?
It's something I can't explain until you're there, but we had 10,000 plus fans at every single meet. The lights would go off for our intros. We'd have fireworks. It was a really big deal. We were second behind football at our school. So gymnastics was part of the university, and everyone knew the gymnasts, everyone knew about the sport, which was really cool. But like I said, 10,000 plus sellouts at every single gymnastics meet, season ticket holders, just like football and basketball. So it was amazing.
What was that like the first time you experienced it? Like, I'm sure people had told you, and maybe you had seen it in recruiting visits, yeah, but like, when you're the one being celebrated? What is that like? And how similar was it, if at all, to your Team USA experience?
Very different from Team USA experience. It was very like quiet, like some quiet music, wave to the crowd, whereas college gymnastics was like loud, like I said, fireworks, run out, 10,000 people screaming at you at the top of their lungs. So very different experiences. The very first time was just like an adrenaline rush. And then it's kind of like a, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is me kind of moment. Like you dream about that and then you see it happening. So it was, it's something I'll never forget.
What were some of the road venues like, and what was it like being a competitor on an away team going into some of these places if they're similar to what you experienced at Georgia?
Yeah. We always said we had to create our own energy because on the intros, they'll make it really loud and crazy for the home team and then really just kind of quiet and laid back, very much like Team USA intros for the away team. So we always tried to create our own energy. But there's other programs that have really great intros too, and it's always like everybody's trying to level each other up and see what more they can do each year. So it's cool to see how far they've come with that.
Did your Team USA experience help you in that you had the ability to get your mind right, get yourself into the spot you need to be without all that noise? You had done that at high levels with Team USA, that you were able to transfer that for when you guys were going somewhere and they obviously weren't as excited to see you as they were the home team?
Yeah, for sure. I think having the Team USA experiences where it is more quiet and stuff, it's easier to get in your own head. So it actually trains you more to be able to go up with, you know, all those people either screaming at you when you're at home or when you're in that quiet environment. It kind of sets you up for both places.
Did you find it at all difficult when you're in a home environment like that, being able to lock in and not get, I don't know if carried away, but, you know, you're talking adrenaline, like, yeah, to, okay, and want to go a million miles an hour. And did you almost have to kind of ratchet yourself down to get to the spot where you needed to be, the headspace you needed to be to do what you needed to do?
Yeah, I think the good thing about starting at a home meet, it's always the same way. You always start on vault. So you need that adrenaline. You need that power. So you don't necessarily have to dial it back too much. And then by the time you get to beam, it's the third event. So you've settled in a little bit. The crowd settled in a little bit. But yeah, naturally, I think trying to stay, we always said stay in our own bubble. And no matter what's going on around us, we're staying focused on what we have to do and doing the same thing we did in the gym.
So when you think of your college gymnastics experience, what are some of the favorite memories?
Man, there's so many. But like you said, running out that very first time is definitely one. And then it's hard to beat. We won two national championships, so it's hard to beat those moments. And then also the year we won SEC championships, we were behind. We didn't know we won until the meet was like completely over. We actually had thought we lost it with some mistakes and then found out we won. So definitely those experiences of being at the top, it's hard to beat those moments.
Did you always figure you were going to coach one way or another?
Actually, no. I, out of college, did some event planning for about 6 months, sat at a desk a lot, but also then was running around nights and weekends doing the events. And I think I quickly realized that that wasn't for me. And I wanted to be able to share some of the experiences I learned and the things that I learned through, you know, the highs and the lows of my career with athletes and just better them as people and athletes. So it was not originally in the cards for me, I didn't think. And then here we are, and I love it, and I wouldn't change it. And it's funny because I always say that I worked all the time when I did event planning because I worked the 9 to 5 and then did events nights and weekends. But I often do the same thing with college coaching. You know, we have meets on the weekends. We do recruiting, all that stuff. But it just feels so different when you love what you're doing.
Now, you had a long stint. You were at Hawaii doing CrossFit.
Yeah.
Like that, living the dream, like, you know, how did that come about? Did the CrossFit take you to Hawaii or did Hawaii introduce you to CrossFit?
My husband actually took me to Hawaii. He was in the military, so we went there. CrossFit, I think, filled a bit of a void that I was missing with gymnastics. I felt a little lost for a few years after the sport and didn't know how to fill that. And so that competition, competing in CrossFit and finding that competition again really helped me fill that void a bit. And it allowed me to, you know, feel like myself again and also find my passion back to gymnastics and coaching.
Talk to me about CrossFit. The word that when I talk to people about it, I've never done it, but the word intense comes up a lot. Like, what is CrossFit all about?
Yeah, it's definitely intense, but I think what I loved so much about it is it's different every time you go to a class. It's different every time you go to a competition. You never know what you're going to have to do. And I got to travel all over the world for that. So it made me feel, like I said, a little bit like myself, having that competition drive. And being able to do it with friends and like get to meet people and travel with people. It had that similar feel to me.
CrossFit competition. What are you doing? How is it judged? And how much did your gymnastics background help make you an elite CrossFit competitor?
The conditioning we do in gymnastics is actually extremely similar. So it's all like circuit kind of based stuff. So when you go to a competition, you never know what you're going to be doing there. I guess they do release like the workouts like the week before, but you can have anywhere from 3 to 7 different workouts. It depends how many days the competition is, if it's 1 day or 3 days. And then you're judged based on if you do the reps correctly. I mean, I'm trying to think of another way to say, as long as you're not cheating and like you're, you know, squatting all the way down and throwing to whatever target or, you know, pulling, make sure your pull-ups are above the bar. So that's how they count the reps. But it's usually a time domain and you have a certain number of reps to get through and a certain number of rounds of exercises.
And it sounds like a gymnastics background would be very helpful because you're utilizing so many different muscles and, you know, focuses and stuff like that. It's not just one thing. You've got to be able to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very well.
And like in CrossFit, they have certain skills that they call like gymnastics movements that come based on certain skills that we do in gymnastics, obviously lower level stuff. But yeah, I think we use so many different muscles and so many parts of our body in gymnastics that it transfers over really well to CrossFit. And like I said, our conditioning, the circuit base where you're moving, you're getting your heart rate high is very similar to the CrossFit.
And now you lived in Hawaii for 5 years.
I did, yeah.
Let's put the gymnastics aside. Just where in Hawaii and what was that like to just wake up every day there?
Yeah, we were in Kailua, Hawaii.
Okay.
So we, in my opinion, was the best side of the island on Oahu. It was amazing. We did a lot of sunrises. We would get up. It's not something I do now. Get up, go drink coffee on the beach and watch the sunrise. You do get a lot of like sun guilt. Like if it's sunny outside and you're inside, you feel bad about it. So you feel like you have to go to the beach and go outside. But it was an amazing experience. And I'm really thankful that I got to experience that.
Was that portion of your life unique from anything else you've ever experienced? Like is that... And I don't know if you could really replicate what it's like to live in Hawaii. Or if you can, there's very few places you could probably do it.
Yeah, I don't think there's many places here that you could do that. We moved from Hawaii to Delaware, so that was a
very similar.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, but it was also a rude awakening when I saw the beaches there, and I'm like, where's the crystal clear blue water? And the water's very cold, and, you know, in Hawaii, the water, like cold water, was not cold. And, you know, we had beautiful weather almost all the time. It wouldn't get below like 70 degrees. If it was 70, we were in Uggs, which when I first moved there, I was like, what are people doing? And then 5 years later, here I was in my Uggs when it was 70 degrees outside. So I don't think it's anything you can replicate. I think you gotta live that experience.
Time to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Temple University head women's gymnastics coach Hillary Steele in just a moment. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It is time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic Accord or HRV, see dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Temple University head women's gymnastics coach Hillary Steele. So did you come to Delaware to eventually take the Maryland job, or did you guys move and then the Maryland job or the Maryland opportunity came around?
We moved and then the Maryland opportunity came around. I knew when we were in Hawaii that I wanted to get back into college coaching. But unfortunately, there was no college gymnastics out in Hawaii, and we had just gotten married. So I did what I could out there with club coaching to get my foot back in the door and get back involved in gymnastics. But I knew when we came back that I was going to start figuring out my career path and how to get there, and coaching was that.
And I want to jump back to your time at Georgia. Mm-hmm. You were a volunteer assistant at Georgia after you graduated, correct?
Yep.
And that was your first taste of the college coaching. Yeah. What was it like? I asked this to a lot of coaches. To go from competitor to coach, and I'm sure with a lot of the same, you were mm-hmm. a lot of your teammates were now people that you were coaching. Mm-hmm. And was it hard? Did you feel like you had to kind of draw lines? And was it weird, like maybe teammates that you used to go party with, mm-hmm. now all of a sudden you have to kind of be a voice of authority? Was that a difficult transition or was it not that big a deal?
I don't think it was that hard for me. I think luckily my teammates, we had so much respect in each other that they understood the line, as did I, and just that role switch. I think for me, I just was not ready to be done with gymnastics. So that helped me kind of, I said, fill the void previously with CrossFit, but kind of the same sort of deal. For me, gymnastics felt like it ended and I wasn't ready for it yet. So that coaching allowed me to be in the gym and still do what I love, but just in another fashion. But yeah, I think my athletes at the time, I guess, did a good job of separating that, and as did I.
So after you come back, get the opportunity at Maryland, and you're coaching, you're a volunteer assistant, but you're working with all the events. Is that correct?
Yep.
Do you look at events differently as a coach than you did as a competitor?
That's a great question. I think not necessarily. I think I just look at how I approach coaching those athletes on those events. And like I said, the things that I know helped me as an athlete, or the things that I know, you know, may not have helped me, and trying to help them understand those things instead of having to figure those things out. But I don't think I necessarily look at them a different way. Although bars was one of my weaker events, and I do love coaching bars. I don't coach a ton of bars here, but so it's interesting to see how, as an athlete, it might not have been your favorite, but as a coach, you really enjoy doing it.
Do you think the fact that it wasn't your strongest is maybe why you enjoy coaching it so much, because it didn't maybe come as easy yeah. as some of the other ones?
Yeah, and I think, like I said earlier, it's a harder event to find that talent on, so you can kind of pick it apart a little bit more, dial in those details, and you still have the ability to like teach even at this high level, and to teach new things and just have that light bulb go off. That light bulb moment for athletes is always cool to see, when it's like, oh, okay, I get this. So yeah, I think with it being a weaker event for me, being able to coach it is definitely enjoyable.
So you're at Maryland for a couple of years, and you come to Temple first as an assistant in 22. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
So when do you start to think in your head that I think I would like to run my own program? Is that something that once you kind of got a taste for coaching was always kind of paper on the refrigerator, mm-hmm. this is a goal? Or was it something it took a few years and you started to think like, I think I'd like to do this?
I think I knew going into college coaching that that was eventually going to be my goal. Every interview that I did, the coach would ask me, what's your long-term goal? And I was very honest, like, my goal is to become a head coach, to be able to run a program and grow a program. And that's what I love so much about Temple, is I have the ability to continue to grow the athletes and grow the program. And, you know, we're not the top program out there, so there's so much room for improvement and putting my own touch and flair on it.
So when you become the head coach, a year, I guess you were an assistant for a year, and then you took over the program. Yep. Did you know what you didn't know as far as being the final voice, being the person in charge? Because it's very different in any sport going from an assistant mm-hmm. to the head coach. And a lot of times there's not an appreciation for the things that come across your desk that have maybe nothing to do with Saturday's match against Penn. Yeah. Like, it's just, you know, were you ready for that?
I think as it comes, you learn. I think I knew that it was going to be more challenging and there would be things that I would not expect in the unexpected. But yeah, I think in my head, I knew I was ready for the challenge. But I did say when I got the job, those exact words, I'm like, you don't know what you don't know. But the only way to know those things is to live through them and learn from them and grow from them. So I think going into it, I had the expectation that it was going to be different. naturally the athletes sometimes want to go to the assistants first and then come to the head coach. So that's like a little bit different experience there. But I was definitely ready for the challenge and embracing that.
How much do you appreciate the competition more as a head coach because you're pulled in so many other directions? I would imagine there are times when, like, a competition or it's a relief because I just get to focus on gymnastics and I'm not worried about fundraising. I'm not worried about recruiting. Do you find more relief in the actual competition now because it's almost like a respite?
It's a mixture because naturally there's still nerves as a head coach. I always say I think I'm more nervous as a coach than I was as an athlete. But it's also a relief that I'm doing ultimately what I'm passionate about in coaching these girls and bettering the program. So, yes, you don't have to worry about all the things that are going on around you at that time. It's like, let's dial into what we're doing and how we're doing and how to get these girls to compete at their absolute best and feel their most confident.
How difficult is it as a coach? This is another go-to question of mine, regardless of the sport. When you're the competitor, you are doing it. You're in control. Obviously, as a coach, only so much you can do, and you have to watch and hope that they do what you've worked on and do it correctly. How hard is it to cede that control as a competitor to not be able to be the one doing it and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think that's probably why I'm more nervous as a coach in coaching. But you hope that you train them enough that they have that confidence and they feel they have that control. And so we want to get to a point where everybody watching and behind them on the team feels that confidence within them. And so that kind of exudes over to us. And we're like, okay, you know, we trained for this moment. They got it. So that's where we always hope to get to by the middle of the season. The beginning's always a little more nerve-wracking, but you want to get to a point where it's autopilot and it's like, you know your athletes got it.
Is success different for you, what you consider success as a coach, than it was as a competitor?
Yes and no. I think being at this program, we set goals every year and then we define our success by, did we get 1% better? We talk a lot about that every single year. Like, did we improve from the last time? So it doesn't necessarily matter who we're competing against. As I always tell the girls, we're competing against ourselves to better ourselves. When I was at Georgia, we had very high expectations and expected those things of ourselves. So a little more of like, we expected to be at the national championship. So success looked a little different, but I think in the long run, it is the same. It's, you know, did you get better from what you've previously done? Are you excelling in the sport? And I think that's what we're trying to do. And ultimately, we have big goals, but it might take a little bit longer to get there as long as we're getting better every day.
I asked you earlier, you know, about hotbeds when you're recruiting and stuff like that. How long did it take you to kind of get your arms around the concept of recruiting? Was it right away or did it take some time?
I think I'm still learning and growing on recruiting. I think it's going to be a never-ending process, especially the way NCAA athletics continues to change. But and I also think it depends from year to year on what you need as a coach or what you need, what your team needs, and how to fill those gaps. So I think it's ever changing, and you can't look at it like this is how I'm going to do recruiting. Ultimately, though, it comes down to building the relationships with those athletes, and you want them to feel comfortable with you as coaches and your athletes as teammates before they step foot on campus. So I think building that relationship is a very, very important part of the recruiting process, but I think it will always change.
On a match day, what is your, I don't mean role's not the word, but like, what are you doing? Like, and how does, you said it starts with the vault. Mm-hmm. So you do every event, like, all the vaults at the beginning and then vaults done, mm-hmm. and then you move on to the next thing.
Yep.
So where are you? Are you constantly talking to your athletes? Is it more at the end you talk to them, more at the beginning? Like on game day, how are you maneuvering and working yourself?
Yeah. So I think my role on meet day is more so to help them feel confident and feel ready by the words that I give them, less about actually coaching what they're doing. But the way we kind of do it is we circle up before each event goes and we just pump them up, give them the confidence they need as a group, as our group of six. We stay together in a little group. And then before they go individually, we also, they come talk to the coach on that event just to get some, whether it's wisdom, some confidence, pump them up. I like to say it depends on the athlete, and I try to understand those athletes and what they need from me before they go and coach them to that for their meet day. So some of them don't like a lot. Some of them, it's you got it. Some of them, they need a whole thing of like, this is what I want you to do here. I want you to be confident there. So it's very different per athlete. After the event's done, we'll circle it back up as a whole team. We use that moment more for like, you know, we still got this, whether it was good or bad. Like, we have three more events to go. So what are we going to do from here is what matters. So we use that to kind of keep the ball rolling as we move on to the next event.
Can you sense as a coach when your team's got it and when they don't? And I don't mean like they obviously know what they're doing, but can you sense like, oh, I don't like the energy, or we're flat, or
yep.
Nah, we're going to be tough today. We could surprise some people or whatever it is. Like, can you sense that in the realm of gymnastics with your team?
Yeah, absolutely. And we will point out to them when they're feeling a little flat, and whether it's a certain person who needs to get the team together. Sometimes hearing it from us is not as successful as like one of their teammates being like, we got to come together. We still got this. A lot of times it will be like, if the meet is started out maybe a little bit lower than we wanted, or we had some mistakes. So it's just getting them on board that what we do now after those mistakes matters more than what we do after a super successful rotation. But you can definitely feel it when that energy starts to decrease. And Temple Gymnastics is always, we have always been known for our energy. So if it gets a little quiet, we figure out a way to hype everyone up and get everybody back on board.
Love to win or hate to lose? Which resonates more with you?
Love to win. I think losing, you can learn a lot from losing. And that's kind of what we try to remind them after those moments is like, what can we take from here? How can we get better from the moment? So I think if we can learn from those moments, then we'll be able to get to that winning.
You talk about learning from losing. Like, is that, have you always had that approach, or is that something that has come with experience that, yes, it sucks, but, you know, did you have a point in your career where it was harder to get over the losses than it sounds like maybe it is now?
I definitely think that comes with experience. And like I said earlier, I had a mental shift in my gymnastics career when I got to college, and I couldn't even tell you why or how that became, but I was very worried about other people and what they thought of me in my elite career, as opposed to like, how can I get better and what do I need to do? And then in college, I became a very confident athlete, and I think I just love what I was surrounded by and the people I was surrounded by helping me do that. But I think ultimately that elite career helped me to get to that point.
How does what you went through there with that confidence situation, how does it make you a better coach? Do you feel like maybe you're a little more sensitive to some of the uncertainties that college athletes might go through and maybe be able to sense it a little more than somebody who didn't kind of have that deal with confidence when they were an athlete?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I'm able to tell when someone is worried about what's happening around them and what people are thinking about them instead of worrying about themselves. And like I said, how do they get better in that moment? And just being able to take those experiences that I've learned and be able to talk to them like, hey, here's what I went through, because sometimes that helps an athlete too, to hear like, oh, you went through that same thing. So you know what you're talking about. You can help me through these moments.
Favorite part of your job?
I would say just bettering the athletes as people, not necessarily their gymnastics itself, but really just helping them become the best versions of themselves and realizing that they're more than just gymnastics. I think that's a really hard transition for any elite athlete, is to realize who you are as a person and not just the athlete, and to realize that, you know, a bad day in gymnastics or in your sport doesn't make you a bad person. So finding other things they're passionate about outside of the sport and things that they're good at. I encourage them to do that all the time. We talk about it. I try to talk about other things in practice. And yeah, just getting them to understand who they are as a person.
And my final question, somebody who interacts with Temple Gymnastics, as a fan, as an opponent, what's kind of the thing you want them to take away that when they think of Temple gymnastics, they think of blank?
Grit and fight. I think we want our program to be tough and to fight through any battle and to get stronger from those moments. So anytime we face adversity, like we're facing now, to get stronger through those moments and yeah, that we're not going to back down.
Hillary Steele, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Temple University head women's gymnastics coach Hillary Steele for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All the Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.